always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
Tony Colombo.
Libertarianism is all about individual liberty.
Katie Fitzpatrick.
Oh, good for you.
Colombo and Katie on News Talk STL.
Time to rise, has been engaged with better best.
Welcome to Tuesday afternoon here on Colombo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. I am Tony Colombo. However, my partner Katie Fitzpatrick is not in this studio today. Katie's a little under the weather. Hopefully she will be back tomorrow. Hopefully she's feeling better and will be back with us tomorrow. In the meantime, my other producer, the producer of the Bluff City Outdoors show, my Saturday show, Quentin is here with us. Producer Quentin in studio. If you're watching on the cameras, definitely not Katie. Q, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you? It says Katie up there, but it's not Katie.
Clearly not Katie.
That's right.
About a foot and a half taller than Katie. And we got a packed show for you today. Very exciting show for you today. We're going to talk to Crane Durham from nothingbuttruth.com in about 10 minutes from now, as we do every Tuesday afternoon. We're also going to talk to the sheriff of Jefferson County. Sheriff Dave Marshak is going to join us just after 3 o'clock. With all the things happening with these protests, we've got statements being made by the California Highway Patrol today about, you know, law enforcement's responsibility and their actions during these protests that we're seeing all across the country. You know, I thought it would be very interesting, a perfect person to talk to about that, Sheriff Dave Marshak. So we're gonna talk about those issues with him. And then we're going to talk to Mike McCleary, the owner of Intervine, who not only is a high-tech guy with his company, Intervine, of course, with their flashlights and lanterns and headlamps and things like that, but also somebody who is an AI expert. And, you know, we've covered a lot of really interesting AI stories here on the show recently, and want to talk a little AI and some of the latest developments in that area with Mike McCleary from Intervine at about 3:20 this afternoon. So packed show for you. Wanted to start with one of the advantages of having Quentin in studio is, Q, you're an athlete. Former athletes. So am I. So you're probably a little more accomplished than me, but yeah, we're in the same club.
It's all in the past.
It's all in the past. The distant past for me. And there's a couple of sports stories at the top of the headlines today. One, the local story, very sad story, tragic story, that legendary Hall of Fame St. Louis Cardinals manager Whitey Herzog has passed away at the age of 92. It was cool to see Whitey on opening day this season, so that was great that the Cardinal fans got one last chance to see the great Whitey Herzog this season. He was the general manager of the Cardinals from 1980 to 1990. Of course, led the team to a World Championship in 1982, was Manager of the Year, Major League Manager of the Year in 82. He was National League Manager of the Year in 1985. That 1985 team, Q, you weren't even around in 1985, right?
I don't think that was a thought.
Not even close.
No.
The 1985 Cardinals was probably my favorite team of all time. I was 7, 8 years old. That was Ozzie Smith in his prime, Jack Clark, Tommy Herr, Terry Pendleton, Willie McGee, Vince Coleman, who was my favorite player in the world at the time.
Blues, right?
They had the baby blues that they would wear from time to time. That was their special uniform that they would wear from time to time. It was amazing. And of course, Whitey Herzog was the manager of that team and went to the World Series, lost to the Kansas City Royals, the famous Dinkinger umpire call at first base that many Cardinal fans, including myself, will never forgive. that 1985 team was my favorite team as a kid. I still think it's probably the best Cardinal team of all time, and huge fan of Whitey Herzog. I'll take half a Whitey Herzog over 10 Tony La Russas any day of the week. So, very sad, but also an opportunity to reflect on what a great life. He local guy, grew up or was born in New Athens, Illinois. This guy was, he lived in St. Louis, you know, after retiring and all of that. So lived in the community and just great, great man, great, great manager. And it's sad to see Whitey Herzog has passed away at the age of 92. The other story, and also this WNBA stuff with Caitlin Clark, this draft, there's a local story in this too.
Yes.
We had a local, local girl, Kate Martin, who was on the she was Iowa teammate, Caitlin Clark's mm-hmm. Iowa teammate, and she got drafted last night, number 18.
That's right.
That's fantastic.
That's amazing. From Edwardsville, right?
Yeah, from Edwardsville. Yes, from Edwardsville High School. She grew up in Edwardsville, went to Edwardsville High. Now she's drafted number 18 in the WNBA draft. This is Kate Martin again. She was Caitlin Clark's Iowa teammate. She said that she was at the draft mostly to support Caitlin mm-hmm. and was hoping to hear her name called. And she got it. And she was drafted to the champions.
I know. Vegas.
Yeah, the Vegas team. Aces. Yeah, the Vegas Aces. Yeah. So super cool. Very awesome. So tragic sports news, local sports news, but also a really cool sports headline, local sports headline today. But I wanted to, we're going to dive into, you know, the headlines and all of that, the political news with Crane Durham here in just a moment. But I wanted to talk about this WNBA story that has gotten legs today and has been at the top of the headlines, especially while we have a minute here with Q in the studio. Russell Wilson, the football quarterback, Steelers quarterback, is being quoted all over today for a tweet where he said, quote, "These ladies deserve so much more, praying for the day." And people are writing that like there's headlines that say, like, Russell Wilson demands in WNBA players get paid more. Russell Wilson calls for WNBA players to be paid more. That is not how I read that statement. I could be wrong, and I want to get your thoughts on this. How I read it is him saying, again, this is all he said. These ladies deserve so much more, praying for the day. The way I read that is that somebody like Russell Wilson and any pro athlete understands the math better than everyday folks. To me, it's him saying these are elite level athletes. I wish they were getting paid for that level of success that they have reached. Not saying, hey, you need to give them all this money that doesn't exist, by the way.
To me,
it's him saying, like, it's unfortunate that the women don't make as much as the men, and I wish that they did, and I hope we get to that day someday, which is a very admirable and something I would echo. But I don't think that's a demand to the WNBA owners who aren't making enough money to pay millions to do so. How do you read that?
I think you're spot on. But the number one thing, if they make a headline out of what he's actually saying, are they going to get any clicks? Are they going to get any views?
Right.
You know,
right.
So yeah, I mean, it's all clickbait.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, Russell Wilson, you know, if you know Russell Wilson, you know his character. He's not demanding anything.
He's not the kind of guy that's in the news making a bunch
Nor are the athletes demanding, any athlete demanding that on the women's side. They all understand what it is. You know, why the money is.
I think that baseball players and football players, I don't hold it against them. You know, make your money, get as much as you can. These owners are certainly making mm-hmm. even more, and these right. TV networks are certainly making even more. But the fact that that anybody can get, you know, can make $10 million a year playing a sport is pretty unbelievable. And while these salaries are certainly not anything compared to that, The average WNBA player makes $150,000 a year. The top players make about $250,000 a year. She's starting at $76,000 a year. Not great for a professional athlete, but any person coming out of college making $70,000, $80,000 and, you know, averaging in a job that averages $150,000, they're not broke. And again, they would make more money if there was more money being, it's just a big math problem. You know, it's just a big math equation. If there's more revenue being brought in, if there's more tickets being bought, more advertisements being bought on television, more merch being sold at the, at the stands, then they would make more money.
But this is what's going to change it. This kind of draft class where you have Caitlin Clark, and not just Caitlin Clark.
You think so?
Because there was another, to me, there's another story, Chicago Sky. They got the two best bigs out there.
Yeah.
Camilla Cardoza from South Carolina, the girl who was just unstoppable, and Angel Reese. So now you got Cardoza and Angel Reese. Like, that's bringing in viewership to the WNBA. Caitlin Clark in Indiana.
Yeah.
Viewership.
Yeah. You think that she'll bring in, you think that those ladies and especially somebody like Caitlin Clark will bring the eyeballs that she brought to college basketball to the WNBA?
Yes.
Because I don't know about that transition.
No, yeah, yes and no. Yes, for the short term.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe for the first couple weeks, first four, five games. And when the season gets going, it's, you know, I don't think the viewership's going to be there as much.
The game just is not the same game. It's just not the exciting.
It's not the atmosphere.
There's something about the atmosphere of college that will make a women's game, you know, comparable to a men's game. Because of the... But that atmosphere doesn't exist at the pro level. And then if that atmosphere doesn't exist, then the game, the entertainment of the game needs to fill that gap. And it doesn't.
It doesn't.
The women's sports, my daughter's a gymnast.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not like every sport, if it's not the men's sport, people aren't watching. People would rather watch women's gymnastics than men's gymnastics. It's obvious because when the Olympics are on, when the Summer Olympics are on, the women's gymnastics is one of the top ratings getters. It's one of the, it's in prime time every night, not the men's gymnastics team, the women's gymnastics team. You could say the same thing for figure skating. Women's figure skating gets way more attention than men's figure skating does. It's a more prime time, more mark. So it's not always.
Who's watching though?
I think both men and women. Women more, certainly. But I think a man, you know, just even before my daughter was a gymnast, if I'm watching the Summer Olympics, I'm an Olympics kind of nerd. I love watching the Olympics. I love watching the women's gymnastics stuff as a man.
Yeah.
So I think more women also watch, and I think you bring those men and women together. So it's not every sport. It's not every single sport. Only the men's leagues count or get more eyeballs. But when you're talking about basketball, it's just the gap is so huge between the NBA and the WNBA.
I don't think that gap's going to close anytime soon.
Will it close a little bit? How long can Caitlin Clark?
What can
they do? And what can they do to close the gap?
Well, again, it's a hard question.
But
for the NBA All-Star break, I think they did a good job. You bring together, you know, you incorporate the women's into it. But again, that's just for the moment.
Yeah.
That only lasts for how long?
Yeah. You know what I think they should do? I think they should focus on the local markets. Mm. I think they should stop trying to make the WNBA like a national product like the NBA.
Right.
Focus on your local teams and focus on your local markets, especially markets that don't have an NBA team. Mm-hmm. Like, look at how St. Louis has adopted the Battle Hawks. Oh, we don't have an NFL team anymore.
I know.
They're selling tens of thousands of tickets at the Dome to see, you know, minor league football, essentially.
Nice, essentially, right?
Because there's a craving in this market. Mm-hmm. For professional football. So focus on markets that don't have the NBA where you can stir up local interest and you can have a lot of success. doing, you know, with that type of approach. I don't think pretending like the WNBA and the NBA are on the same level and talking about them in the same sentence and marketing them the same way, I don't think is the way to boost the WNBA.
Right, or close that gap.
It's, yeah, or close that gap.
That's not going to work. But this is the time where it can change. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, Caitlin Clark.
If there's anybody that can do it, it's the, like you said, it's this class of ladies coming in.
That's right.
Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I'm sure we're not done talking about that. And speaking of athletes, we're bringing another one in the conversation. Crane Durham, on top of being a top-notch political insider, he is also an athlete and a coach, tennis coach. We're going to talk to Crane Durham about Speaker Mike Johnson facing renewed motions to vacate his seat. Also, the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, is now threatening to put Donald Trump in jail while he's already in court. We'll get you up to speed on all of these headlines and more as we go through a busy afternoon on Columbo and Katie.
Look, I'm very young, energetic, and handsome. What the hell am I doing this for?
You're listening to Columbo and Katie. Follow Tony Colombo on Twitter at Tony Colombo Talk.
Yeah, I like that Perry Woods music there. Support local music every chance you get. And support live local radio right here on News Talk STL. Your home for the most live and local coverage every single day, starting with Mike Ferguson in the morning at 5:30 a.m. and then going all the way to 10 p.m. with the Rob Carter Show live every night from 8 to 10 and everything in between. Welcome back to Columbo and Katie. Tony Colombo here in studio with producer Quentin in for Katie today, who will hopefully be back with us tomorrow. And, of course, joining us on the line as he does every Tuesday afternoon at this time, Crane Durham from NothingButTruth.com. And Crane, even when Katie's sick, brothers don't shake hands. Brothers got a hug.
Brothers got a hug, and all of a sudden we hug, and then it's like you're holding me back. And I'm like, what's going on? And you say, well, I'm Joe Biden, and you're Israel.
And now we're role-playing a fun little game just between me and you. So
that's it. We'll let everybody in on the joke there. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know what? Let's start there. Let's start with what's happening in Israel. It kind of ties into, I also want to talk to you about the latest threats against Mike Johnson. These coming from Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky, who I generally respect. I like a lot of things that Thomas Massie's said and done over the years. Not everything, certainly not everything, but a lot. But anyway, and this kind of, you know, this issue is one of the things that ties into that issue. The way that Mike Johnson has brokered a budget deal to break down funding for various wars in Israel and Ukraine into separate bills, but also kind of left the border just unaddressed. So it all kind of ties in together. But let's start with Israel Joe Biden telling Benjamin Netanyahu this week not to retaliate after being attacked by Iran. I mean, it's bad. It's real bad, Crane. What are your thoughts on what's happening?
Well, I don't think it's, put it this way. If I were wearing a bulletproof vest and somebody shot me, would that make it any less of an attempted murder?
No, it wouldn't.
And
I'm glad you said it that way, because I brought this up with Katie yesterday. Mm-hmm. We talked about the Iron Dome. I read a whole piece about the Iron Dome. I just learned yesterday that the Iron Dome is only the first of three layers, that there's actually two layers of defense after the Iron Dome. And, you know, it's amazing. You know, over 90% of attacks, missile attacks, bombings have been stopped by the Iron Dome since it was put in place in like 2011 or however long it's been, you know, a very long time there in Israel. But I said exactly what you just said yesterday. It's almost like they're so good at stopping the attacks that we act like we act like they're not attacks anymore. Iran launched over, I think it was over 300, a combination of drones, bombs, and missiles over the weekend. And they're not expecting or hoping that the Iron Dome shoots them all down. They want 300 missiles to crash into women, children, old people, schools, hospitals, churches, and everything else. They want to level Israel. But because the Iron Dome stops most of it, everybody acts like it's not a real attack.
Yeah, and it is depressing because it's not like the answer is like, oh, I don't know what the answer is. Everybody knows what the answer is. One, you don't normalize these types of attacks, and you allow Israel, since I've said from the beginning, as you well know, Tony, I said, let Israel win the war. And that does go through Iran. But going back to what is taking place, the signal we send our allies is deep uncertainty, and we encourage our enemies because weakness invites aggression.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine, Crane, if there was an attack by Iran, or you know, just for apples to apples, we could just say Iran over the weekend, and there are 300 bombs and missiles that were launched at the United States at our homeland on Saturday, and then on Sunday we learn that the Prime Minister of the UK or Trudeau up in Canada called Joe Biden and said, "Hey, look. We got your back. We're still friends, but don't retaliate against that attack on your country because we don't want to make things worse and we don't want to stir up a bigger conflict on the world stage." I mean, can you imagine the audacity? You know what I would tell them, and I hope our president would tell them, is to stick it up their butt because we were just attacked. But that is exactly what Joe Biden did. He called Netanyahu and said, "Don't retaliate. Don't make things worse," after he was just attacked.
And the idea that they fear escalation, the real enemy is not escalation. It is the real enemy, okay? And that would be Iran, and that would be Russia, that would be China and their axis, and understanding that. And you do not create deterrence. You can't have deterrence if you're unwilling to use credible threats of force. And what makes them credible is that you use them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you got to use them. And the other point to
peace
this
through
is
strength, right? How, somebody said that once.
Yeah. Yeah. As you know, those are the days, Tony. You were on the air, I was listening to you, and Ronald Reagan was in office. God bless America. Here's the deal. I am sitting there, and I'm looking at how there doesn't seem to be moral outrage at the fact that we have Hamas protesters in blocking traffic, and we're getting a bunch of excuses why they're not being taken off the streets. But we've lived with this with BLM and a whole host of other things, and we're tired of the fact that people are not being held accountable. And I can't wait to hear your interview with the sheriff.
Oh, yeah. I am very much looking forward to talking to Sheriff Marshak at 3 o'clock because he's somebody that I've talked to for years. He's been one of my go-to law enforcement experts for years on the air, before there was a Columbo and Katie, before there was a News Talk STL. And he's thankfully followed us and still been a big part of this station and this show here. And the reason that I respect and like to talk to him so much is he doesn't mince words. He'll tell you, you know, an unpopular opinion or a non-PC opinion. If he believes that that's the way to keep people safe, if that's the best way for law enforcement to do their job, he doesn't care if it's politically correct or not, and that's why I'm really looking forward to the conversation with him. But Crane, getting back to this situation, you know, on the world stage, we would like Joe Biden and these Democrats to be called out for the ridiculous path that they've put the country on. But here we go again. The Republicans can't get on the same page in their own party. As I mentioned, Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky has threatened to force a vote to oust Speaker Mike Johnson during remarks in a House Republican closed-door conference meeting earlier today if the Speaker did not willingly step aside. He's the second person in the party now after Marjorie Taylor Greene, which again, you know, when Marjorie Taylor Greene does it, it's not taken as seriously. When Thomas Massie said he says he's going to do it, now everybody's paying attention, and I think there's good reason for that. Thomas Massie said, quote, "I asked him to resign, and he said he would not." I said, "Well, you're the one who's going to put us all in this because the motion is going to get called, okay? The motion will get called." Massie took it a step further and said Johnson would lose more Republican support than the 8 House Republicans who voted to oust former Speaker Kevin McCarthy last year. There's more details here. We'll get into them as we go, but I just, you know, want to go step by step. What are your thoughts as we're reading another headline about another Republican Speaker of the House with a razor-thin, the smallest majority you could possibly have in that body, and we're talking about kicking out another Speaker of the House? What are your thoughts?
I'm disgusted by it. I really respect Speaker Johnson. I think that he is a man who is doing the best he can with the hand he's been dealt. And we talked about this before, Tony, and you raised the point of doing the best you possibly can, McCarthy, and then what'd you get? You got a vacuum being created, and it made us look... It was incredible. It didn't build our credibility with the American people in the sense of the agenda and who we are and how we're representing them. And quite frankly, I think Johnson should go to the floor, if he hasn't already, and make the case for his speakership and make the case for the Ukrainian funding and how they're doing it, and make the case for the Israel funding, and explain why he's not going ahead with the border issue, perhaps because it will only fuel more people doing processing and only exacerbate the problem, and it would do nothing to solve it, yet it would provide cover for those who are causing it. So, yeah. No, I think Speaker Johnson, I think it's important for people of the party that agree with Speaker Johnson that they step up and they make their voice heard. Because this, it's just untenable of what we're doing. You're being very destructive, and you don't really have a solution. When I tackle a problem, you have a solution. Stay in Mexico. Get back to the first time you land into another country. Mm-hmm. The first country you land in, that's where you seek asylum. You don't go through it onto America. I mean, yeah. We have solutions for this. Oh, yeah. President Trump had some great solutions to this. So they worked. So whether it's going after Hamas and ending them, whether it is funding Ukraine because they're not going to stop at Ukraine, and we have an agreement, and yes, the Russians agreed to, but they don't share our values. So we got to live in the big boy world and step up and recognize that we are communicating with China through our policies, and China is supporting Russia, and Iran is supporting Russia with drones. So let's not see the world as I want to see it. Let's see it for what it is and recognize that these decisions are very important to the national security of the United States.
Crane, I couldn't agree with you more when you say that Speaker Mike Johnson and his allies need to communicate why these decisions are being made, because there are things that I am very frustrated with, and I know a lot of other Americans are very frustrated with. So, you know, this breaking up, I actually am all for the idea of breaking up the funding packages. And I think a lot of people, I think it makes more sense to break up that Israel's funding should not be tied to Ukraine's funding. They're two very separate wars, two very separate situations. They should not be all tied up in the same bill like we do so many times. So I'm okay with that. And I know there are a lot of conservatives and libertarians that have some issues with the funding of the war in Ukraine more than the one in Israel. But the biggest issue that everybody keeps harping about is why this is happening is what you just touched on, the situation with the southern border and how this has not been addressed. Mm-hmm. And what Mike Johnson's not doing is communicating why he's not, because it doesn't, on the surface, you scratch your head and say, why is there a Republican? Why is there a conservative Speaker of the House that's not addressing it? This is the same Speaker of the House who, I want everybody to remember, laid down an ultimatum at the end of last year to the president and said, do something about the funding, about the southern border, or we're not going to fund any of these wars anymore. Where did that ultimatum go? There's a lot of frustrated conservatives and libertarians going, your ultimatum meant nothing. You're not doing anything in this bill. He needs to communicate why and what the ultimate plan is, because it is very frustrating that here we go again. There's nothing happening at the southern border, and there's no seeming plan to fix anything.
And they have to get on the same page and understand that you got to be able to explain your policy like you're in an elevator, and you only have a 30 seconds to 2 minutes to really gain somebody's attention, keep it, and tell them why you're doing what you're doing. And that's unfair, yeah, but it's the reality we live in, and it can be done. Bottom line, I think it was a mistake in any way to look at marginalizing Ukraine and Israel, for that matter, as well, obviously, as the border. They are all very important, and we can do all of them, and we can vote them separately.
Yeah.
But bottom line, we've got to communicate why we're doing what we're doing, in the sense of conservatives saying, hey, this is what we believe in. And I got to tell you, if you're an isolationist, read history.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. And anybody that's hoping that, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene's threats are just going to kind of go away and this is just going to not turn into anything, don't hold your breath. A GOP lawmaker who was present at the meeting told reporters that Massey told Johnson that he should, quote, just get all this legislation out of the way and then announce he's not going to stay speaker. This Republican was asked if Massey was serious about trying to oust Johnson, to which this Republican congressman said, quote, I've never found him to be someone who is not serious. So just making the point that Massey, when Massey says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. This same congressman told reporters that Johnson's reaction was basically bring it on. So this is happening. This is going to happen. Maybe they stop it before it gets to the vote, but this debate, this story of kicking another Speaker of the House out of their seat is happening. It's going to get hotter before it goes away. So, you know, brace yourselves and hope that people are communicating and somehow everybody gets on the same page before we go through another circus like we did last year when we tried to replace Kevin McCarthy. All right, we're talking to Crane Durham from nothingbuttruth.com. He is going to stay with us. We're going to get you the latest on what's happening with Donald Trump in New York. You know, the term show trial, I think, gets thrown around a little too loosely these days, but this is turning into if it's not a show trial, it's a joke trial, especially with some of the headlines that have come out today. So we will talk about that and more as we continue with Crane Durham here on Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
You and I.
Columbo and Katie, the new faces of talk radio.
$700 billion and $1,300,000,000,000.
Follow us on Rumble at News Talk STL. You're listening to Columbo and Katie.
Welcome back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Tony Columbo in studio with producer Quentin today. Katie is out, but on the line with me right now, as he is every Tuesday afternoon, is our buddy Crane Durham from nothingbuttruth.com. Nothingbuttruth.com, Nothing But Truth Facebook page, and the Nothing But Truth podcast. Crane, remind folks about all those places that people can follow you and get more of the great, smart, quite frankly, sexy Crane Durham. How can they keep up with everything you're doing?
I love you, big fella. Okay, here's the deal. Go to nothingbuttruth.com. We also have a sense of humor there, too, like Tony Colombo and so many of you. We are discussing the current world situation and how we are stumbling into a world war. That's a possibility of miscalculations and the lack of being able to put together a policy of deterrence. We are experiencing it on all fronts. Obviously, our border, which is deeply concerning. We have a portion of the country, whether it be small, they're quite vocal, that is literally chanting death to America. Mm-hmm. We need to enforce the law. We need to expose the nut bars, and we need to challenge them on their rhetoric by exposing it for what it is. It's nihilistic. In the way of what they are trying to do to this country, they oftentimes say how bad this country is. Well, millions and millions of migrants disagree with you and people who are dying to get here. That's one thing. And also, if you put history in context, we are the single best country in the history of the world mm-hmm. for human freedom. Amen. And so people need to say that. Yeah. People need to and by the way, parents, please look at where you're sending your kids. And if your kids are doped up on this crap, you have an obligation to intercede. And you need to make your voices heard, because the strength of this comes from the academic institutions in our country who have been hijacked by funding from the Middle East. I digress, only to say this: nothing but truth is on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great stuff. And you mentioned something that I touched on yesterday, but I think is such an important point. I'm glad you mentioned this. Being able to say death to America and chant that in America is one of the great freedoms that this country allows. It's one of the great freedoms of the First Amendment and the freedom of speech, and what does make this country so great. Not perfect. A lot of problems to still clean up, but still on the world stage, you know, the best opportunity you have for a successful life. And so I'm not saying that anybody should be locked up or that anybody's rights should be taken away for chanting death to America. I just think that it's important to remember that right now in this country, think whatever you want about January 6th. I'm certainly not going to support, you know, people breaking into the Capitol or anything like that. But right now, there are still to this day people in jail for entering the Capitol on January 6th. They're in jail because they are considered to be people that were trying to overthrow this government. And they are in jail for what they said and did on that day. And the people that are all over this country stopping traffic, committing crimes, chanting death to America are not in jail for attempting to overthrow this government. And I'll tell you who I'm more afraid of and who I think is more serious about overthrowing this country. And it's not the people that were at January 6th. Again, not condoning or defending any actions taken on that day. But I think it's an important apples-to-apples comparison of where we're at in this country. That we've got people breaking the law, chanting death to America, and we have people defending that. And we have another group of people that are still locked up today for wanting to, quote-unquote, overthrow the government when they enter the Capitol on January 6th. Something is not even about that situation, Grain.
I like the Colombo flip test always, my friend. Here the deal is, when we see death to America, and you can say it, but you don't have a right to break the law in front of people stopping traffic or whatever it may be. You don't have permits. You don't do it the right way. You're not going through a legal system that way. The other point to that is, I want you investigated, because if you're putting up a flag of Hamas and marching under it, I want our FBI to be on you because I don't want another, God forbid, 9/11 or any kind of terrorist attack that we have seen that could be preventable if we have people communicating and doing their jobs, investigating this stuff, not worried about PC fallout.
Yeah. And we have none of those people being held to account for the crimes like blocking up traffic. I can't even imagine if you could quantify in on the Brooklyn Bridge, for God's sakes, and the Golden Gate Bridge, all of the traffic, all the commerce, all the people going to work, all the people that how much, you know, what the total net cost of all of that was, you know, for these felonies, these crimes of, it's not a crime to protest, but it's a crime to block traffic, to sit in the middle of the road. None of those people are in jail. But today, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg filed a motion to put Donald Trump in jail for contempt of court. Because
that is,
Alvin Bragg says that he violated the gag order by speaking to the press before this trial started, and is saying that if he does it again, the judge should put him in jail for 30 days. So Donald Trump could go to jail for 30 days for some circus. And you know, Crane, you and I are not the biggest Donald Trump supporters in the world, but this is just this is BS at the highest level, and that's what our judicial system, our courts are busy with right now, instead of these important issues like we see on TV yesterday.
Yeah, when it comes down to a choice between Donald Trump and Biden, I guess we are the biggest supporters. We are very much in support or not. I'm not going to speak for you. I am in that way. But no, I've been critical of the former president, as you have, and I think that's just doing our job and living the truth. But bottom line, this contrast is setting up a landslide for President Trump, and I'm praying that happens. I'm praying that people see it, because people are feeling it. They're feeling the crime. They're feeling the disrespect. They're feeling the comments from Katie Couric. pardon me. I don't even remember her. The fact is, making those statements like that, insulting, it goes right back to the smell of Walmart. This is all a part of it wrapped up, but the most important part is not the class envy and going back and forth and building resentments. It is the two-tier justice system and what they are willing to do to get what they want with the law, and not willing to do when it comes to their supporters and them breaking the law.
Crane, before we run out of time, I want to get your reaction to something that Bill Maher said over the last couple of days, over the weekend. He was on his overtime segment for his show, which is the overtime part is on YouTube, and he was answering a viewer question about whether or not Joe Biden will agree to debate Donald Trump. And Bill Maher, who is a supporter of Joe Biden over Donald Trump, said, quote, "Well, I think he will. And I think it's going to be bad for Biden if he goes into the debate. I mean, I've said it before. They're almost the same age. But for some reason, Trump just doesn't present as old and feeble. And he kind of looks the same," unquote. He went on to say there was another question asked about Biden's campaign approach and whether or not he should limit his public appearances and kind of run from the basement like he did in 2020. Mm-hmm. And I think most of us, most political people would say no, that you can't win an election like that. Mm-hmm. Bill Maher says yes. He said he can't do what he said, yeah, well, he can't do what he did last time because there was a pandemic, stay in his basement. I say yes, he can. No one gives a blank about that. The chattering classes will be talking about it, and the public will be like, why do I care? I don't want to watch all this all the time anyway. I don't need to see him every day. He doesn't need to go around the country. Stay where you are. Every once in a while, make a speech from the basement. That's Bill Maher's, and he's being serious. And unfortunately, I think that might be the best winning strategy. I don't think it will win, but I think it might not be a terrible strategy for Joe Biden. I mean, these are Democrats on national television saying, yeah, this president is old and feeble and he's out of it. He should just hide in his basement and only speak when he has to. What is that? What is your reaction to that? And what do you think about that? It's just being publicly stated so, boldly.
Yeah. First off, with Bill Maher, I've debated him, and it's been a pleasure, because even though I disagree with him on a whole host of issues, he puts it out there and he's honorable in that way. And I appreciate it. And I know you do too, Tony, when somebody is like that. Even if you disagree, hey, great, let's have a discussion. No, he can't do it this time, because crisis breeds accountability.
Yeah.
It yields accountability, because you must solve it and you must have the answers and you must be in front of the people to do that. And we've got way too many issues, including inflation, that he needs to be in front of the people. So I think it's right, generally speaking, absolutely hide in Biden, but he has to come out and he has to address these issues.
Crane, really appreciate your time as always, my friend. We will talk to you next Tuesday. In the meantime, have a great rest of your day. And
I love you, buddy. Take care. Feel better, Katie. Take care. All right.
Thanks, Crane. All right. We are going to catch up with the sheriff of Jefferson County. Sheriff Dave Marshak joins us to talk about law enforcement's responsibility in protests and things like that that we have seen recently. That's next.